Hello and welcome to the Worcester Observer podcast. I'm Rob George. This is take three of our intro. Claire's messed up one. I forgot my name on the second one, so let's try again with the third one.
Third time lucky. Third time a charm.
Third time indeed. Joining us once again on a sunny Thursday. We're running a little bit late this week because I was away from work yesterday in hospital with my little boy. All is well, though. And we can start with some breaking news here on the Worcester Observer podcast. It's broken in the last couple of hours, but we'll still talk about it anyway. Robin Walker, the city's MP, is going to endorse Sajid Javid, the Bromsgrove MP, for the next Tory leader.
Interesting. Are they friends, or do we know? Do all our local MPs like hang out?
Whether it's a hangout, I don't know what MPs do at a hangout. I mean, presume they may drink. I don't know. But certainly, they've worked together a lot on a number of things with Sajid when he was at the Department of Local Government, Local Community Secretary. And so they've worked together before. And certainly, I don't think I'm betraying any confidence by saying that Robin spoke very highly of him when I spoke to him on Friday after the bombshell that wasn't a bombshell, that Theresa May's announcement that she is going to resign as Prime Minister next Friday.
We predicted it all, didn't we, though, in our last podcast? I think we started it all off there.
Rob, I think we did. Trendsetters.
I have to say, though, that Sajid Javid is being quite refreshing in his approach. Mm. How many are there now? 12, 13 of them?
We've just had this debate in the office. We don't know whether there's 11 or 12.
There were 12 yesterday, and I thought someone else had put their name in this morning. So I was thinking it could be 13. I could have got that wrong.
It could be double figures. I certainly know that the ruling 1922 committee, the run the Conservative Party, are debating whether to limit the amount of nominations. But, I mean, at this stage, they're only going to be asking MPs. So how hard is it to implement a vote amongst MPs?
Exactly.
You know, you've only got 300 of them. You've just got to ask them. You print off as many ballot papers as you want and then just cross out the ones that get...
That's true. But I do have to say that I like Sajid Javid's approach in the fact that he's coming up with other ideas, not just the whole Brexit thing. He's talking about $1 billion over 3 years, putting 20,000 police officers on the streets and talking about real issues that mean a lot to local people, isn't it?
I could not agree more, and certainly when Robin and I were talking, but Friday was the most dramatic day I've ever had as a journalist, really, because the amount of MPs that were willing to talk so openly, albeit off the record, and I have no intention of betraying their off-the-record comments now, but they're willing to express their frustration and their annoyance that the Conservative Party has been swallowed up by Brexit. And certainly Robin was very keen to say he would support somebody that wanted to broaden the debate, and not just about Brexit, but the future of the country,
right,
and talk about one nation conservatism as well. And I think it'd be a good choice. The favourite never wins.
This is true. What do these people say to you, Rob, when it is off the record? Do they literally say, OK, I'm going to tell you this, but it's off the record and you can't...
It can be that. Yeah. Or I felt very sort of emboldened on Friday. I thought the Conservative Party's a mess. I'm going to start asking things off the record. I've got a good relationship with them all and let's see what you get back. It's basically like fishing. You cast the fishing rod out there and see what you get back.
But why do you need stuff off the record if you can't print it or write about it?
Just background. You may want to know where the MP's thinking lies, and it would inform your writing.
Right, okay.
So you know that if somebody's going, oh, well, he's clearly going to support him or her, you could steer the reader and say...
Oh, I see, clever.
I'm not
going
to reveal it, but maybe that's not... Yeah. But also, it enables you to build up a more human contact, because at times it's MP and journalist, and you get told what they want to tell. But at times, if you're willing to give out information yourself, I mean, I've no problems with passing on information I've heard to people in the party about what other people have said, because it's more than... But I'll only do that if I know that it's likely the other person would have said that anyway.
Right.
But it's very interesting to know what Robin's thinking. I won't betray any confidence, but it's fair to say Sajid is not a surprise that he's nominated him. He mentioned a few candidates, a small number of candidates. Sajid was one of them, so... But I think Sajid is very, very articulate. I think he's bright. I mean, going back many years ago, because I've been a journalist for so, so long, back in the day. No. when he was running for Bromsgrove MP, and they were running hustings at the time, the Conservatives, and there was, I think, six candidates. One of them, incidentally, was Ruth Davidson, who's the leader of the Scottish Tory Party.
Oh, right.
Worked that one out. And he asked to meet Tristan, the star of the Bromsgrove Standard podcast, and I in our Bromsgrove office. And we just went, he said, I just need to find out about the constituency, about what the people are like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you agree to the meeting because it could be the first meeting with the MP for the town. We met him and I was just blown away. He wasn't this archetypal politician, you know, that he'd been a councillor and he'd been an activist.
He's got a background in banking.
He was chief executive of Deutsche Bank.
Wasn't his father like a bus driver? Did I read that? He's from very humble beginnings, but he's self-made. He's an intelligent chap who's climbed the ladder, became the top of, was it Deutsche Bank or something?
Yeah.
So obviously he's an incredible, and I love the fact when politicians are businessmen.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing because I think so many of them haven't got a clue what running a business is all about and they're trying to run our country sometimes.
I think if they've been in the real world, you're right. Yeah. I think that is really cool. I despair of these ones that climb in from councillor and then they're the MP and then they're in the cabinet. You know, Sajid's been very, he was very much outside and he spoke with a freshness. And I actually said to him, because he was running to replace Julie Kirkbride, who stood down after the expenses scandal in 2010. And I said, if you come across to the people of Bromsgrove like you have done in the last hour, you'll actually increase the majority.
Wow.
And he actually did.
But brilliantly, his
capacity for memory on the night of his election, when clearly he'd been doing campaigning, doing all sorts to get out the vote and everything, in front of a crowd of people, he shook my hand and said, you're the only one to predict that I would increase Julie's majority.
Wow.
And he's as genuine as anything. And he's very, very, he's very, very likable.
He could be our next PM. Who knows? What will that mean to this region if he is? I mean, obviously, Worcester's very close to Bromsgrove and we've got a great relationship. Yeah. We cover like the Worcester, Redditch, Bromsgrove area with our newspapers. Would it really put us on the map? Would it be good for the...
I think it would put Worcestershire on the map. I think it would be refreshing to have an MP that wasn't from the south.
Right.
The last two Conservative MPs have represented Oxfordshire, which Oxfordshire will pretty much vote. Because Oxford can vote Lib Dem, Labour. But Oxfordshire, Witney, the area where Cameron resided and was the MP for, very Conservative area. Maidenhead, very Conservative area. I think it'd be good to push the origin of the Prime Minister back from the south towards the north as well. I mean, ideally, I'd like to see somebody from the north of England, because this north-south divide is getting worse and worse and worse. And I think if you had somebody that was born and raised up north, they could bring that down to the south. But I think it will put Worcestershire on the map immeasurably. I think he's very popular. And I think going forward, we need a Prime Minister that had a foot in both camps.
Right.
Everyone knows Theresa May voted Remain. Mm-hmm. So the easiest attack to her is, oh, well, she never believed in Brexit then. But if you go too far the other way and have a Brexiteer, it's like, oh, well, they just want to leave. They've got no interest in... So where Sajid voted Remain...
Did he? I thought he was a Leave. I thought he was Leave.
He voted Remain reluctantly, but has expressed a lot of disquiet and concern about the European Union. And I think that is the way forward. Somebody that may have voted for it but doesn't necessarily believe the sun's shining and everything's wonderful. But he's got a bolder vision for the country. I don't think he comes with any baggage. I've met his wife. They are just wonderful, wonderful people. And his backstory is great, to pick up on what you said. His father was a bus driver and his mother owned a clothes shop.
Right.
But they self-made and they taught it the value of hard work.
Well, Rachel McLean, our other MP for Redditch in our sort of area, she's back in Gove, who's, again, a different kettle of fish, which I'm not a big fan of him. I'd much prefer Sajid to take the reins.
I can see why people...
Yeah. But I'd love to know what Rachel thinks of Sajid, and, because I've seen them at a lot of functions together.
I think they have to work quite close together.
Mm.
But certainly talking to the MPs, and I won't name the other two I've spoken to, but I think Sajid could work on a lot of support. And plus the fact, if he can show, if he gets to the final two that go out to the membership, if Sajid can say, well, look, I've got the support of all the Worcestershire MPs. Worcestershire is the epitome of Middle England, isn't it?
It is. So it's the best county in the world.
Exactly. If he can go, if he can go to the membership and say, look, I'm ticking over with Middle England here. This is where we need to tap into, because that's where the elections are won and lost. That's where majorities are won and lost. Middle England, if you turn them, Tony Blair turned Middle England. And look what happened. He got a majority.
Yeah. Interesting. God, who knew that politics could be so interesting? I mean, it's infuriating as well at the moment, but it is exciting in a way, isn't it?
It is, and I think we'll just linger just for a second and go on to the European election results. There's a very nice half-page news story put together by somebody called Rob George. Don't know who he is. Apparently some sort of political egg.
And I know you did that when you were on your deathbed the other night. You'd been really sick and you still stayed up, watched them all and wrote that article. So well done. Thank you to our local editor, Rob. Thank you to you.
At this point, I think it's only fair I should say, yes, I was on my deathbed with man flu. Read into that what you will. Some of you listening will empathise with me entirely. Most of you will go, grow up and get over with it. But all men will, to be sexist for a moment, all men will know it's man flu, and obviously we were dying. It's the worst feeling in the world.
Well, you managed to write a good article there.
But, voters across the West Midlands delivered a resounding snub to the two main political... I love the word snub in a political context. The Brexit Party topped the poll. It spoke to one of their newly elected MEPs, Martin Daubney. Very, very sensible with what he's saying. You know, all they did was knock on the doorstep. A lot of people annoyed with the Conservatives, annoyed with Labour. So it was fertile territory. They did nothing special.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Tory through and through. You know I am. I'm always very Conservative. But I voted Brexit. I wanted to snub the Tory party as well. And one of my good friends, actually, his name's David Bull. He's a host on off TV and everything. He is an MEP now up in Northern England somewhere.
Yeah, Northwest.
Northwest. And he said exactly the same to me. He says, we might not keep this, but it's the country has pulled together. And they wanted to tell the two main parties where to go, really,
and I'll give
it.
You know, when we've had Ian on, and I've given Nigel Farage a bit of a pasting, I think it's deserving. I'm not rolling back from my views on him, but what I will say is that he's built a brilliant operation because it's tapping into that sheer hacked offness.
Yeah,
and I watch my word there because nearly another word slipped out. But he has tapped into people's utter despair.
What's your view on the BBC's reporting on it all? Did you find them a little bit biased?
No, I think it's fair.
But do you not see... I think it's really bad of the BBC to jump to and make assumptions saying, oh, if you add this together and the Green Party and the Lib Dems... Because I know lots of Green voters who voted Green this time, some of my best friends, but they definitely want to get out of Europe, but they voted on green issues on this European election. So I do think it's a little bit irresponsible of the BBC to be putting these figures together and making all those comparisons. And
I don't think it is. I think it's hypothetical, though, because the Green leadership... I get what you're saying. I get, you know, all parties are broad churches. Not all Green voters, like your friends, want to remain. But the leadership is very pro-Remain. So they're taking the positions of the parties themselves and not the people who vote for them.
Yeah, I just think that it was a little bit irresponsible for the BBC.
Everybody did it. I mean, I don't get the criticism of the BBC because Sky News did a similar thing where they totaled it all up.
But Sky always follow often the BBC.
Yeah, but they're still doing it. So if you're going to criticise...
It wasn't as bad, I don't think. I don't think so. I really watched quite a broad coverage.
I think what it shows, and I don't understand the Brexiteer criticism, because I think it shows that, I mean, we've had the local council elections now and we've had the European elections. The Lib Dems have been basically brought back from the dead,
but they're still massively behind.
They're still massively behind.
Or they were in that race.
If you and I had met at the start of the year and I said the Lib Dems are going to be the big winners of the European elections for local council, you would have wet yourself laughing.
But if I would have said, oh, Nigel Farage is going to do a party and in 6 weeks going to beat them all by...
Exactly.
You would have
and
done
the
same.
And this is the problem.
I mean, imagine the BBC's reporting if the Greens or the Lib Dems had got the Brexit figures.
Yeah.
It would have been, wouldn't it? It would have been through the roof.
But I think a lot of the coverage was quite fair about the Brexit Party. I think everybody acknowledged that they won and they won.
I just don't like fudging figures, and I do feel like the figures were very fudged.
I think what they're trying to do, and I actually agree with them partly, is to say, look, yes, the Brexit Party's topping this poll, but if you... Underneath, the next two behind them, the ones that had the biggest surge, are very pro-Remain parties. It's not like... Because, to be honest, 3 years after a referendum now, everyone should be tired and just want to get out. But because of the failure, the chronic failure of leadership in this country, nobody has been converted. And if anything, there was a gap 3 years ago of about 1.3 million voters or something.
No, it was 48 to 52.
Yeah, but I think it correlated to about 1.3 million voters.
Okay, I don't know what
the majority. Yeah. I think it was 1,369. I could be corrected. 1.3 million. There was a gap,
which is still a lot.
And I do not disagree. It was a victory for out, and it was a democracy, and you only have to win it by one vote. But on a seismic issue like this, that should have been the starting play for. Right, this is not a this is not the UK is just like, oh yeah, get out, we absolutely hate it. There's a majority of people, but there's an awful lot of people that want to remain.
But then but what you've just said there isn't the way our country's built. That's not democracy. Democracy is the biggest vote we shouldn't say, but there's a lot of people who don't want it.
No, but if you keep that in mind... And take people and take the whole people forward. It's like if we have a government that wins, I don't know, a majority of five, you know, small, they don't just think, well, we'll govern for all those that voted for our party. Any prime minister with a brain goes, right, we've scraped in here, so I'm going to have to govern for the next 5 years.
But that's what they've tried to do, and they've made a total... Because they've been bending over backwards to... You know, we voted out. We wanted out. We didn't say we'd have out with terms and conditions and other deals put in place.
Yeah, but you annoy... The deal that's been put forward annoyed, rightly, those that voted to leave. I always think if I'd voted leave and then I was presented with that, I'd be like... I don't want to leave if that's what you're offering me.
Yeah. What do you think about Boris being now put through his paces because of the 350 million a week?
I don't agree with it. I think the legislature and the law of the land and the government of the land should remain two separate things. I think when the law gets involved with politics, when there's no real cause for politics to do so, it's a dangerous precedent because how far do you go back?
This is true.
Do you want to
cross a point?
You know, and how deep do you want to go? You know,
we want to prosecute all those people who said if we didn't join the euro, we would be crippled? Because lots of them did.
Do you want to prosecute Tony Blair?
Exactly.
And if you want to prosecute Tony Blair, do you want to prosecute other members of his government that backed the war in Iraq?
Yeah.
Do you want to go back to the 1980s? Do you want to seek retribution over Margaret Thatcher and her handling of the Falklands? Do you want to seek retribution of how Thatcher handled the miners' strike?
So what do you think this thing... Do you think it will be thrown out with Boris, or...?
I think he's been brought in to ask for his observations, and I would hope it would end there, because I don't see the point. It was... The democracy was at the ballot box... My personal opinion is Brexit has failed, and it is those that were given the responsibility of enacting it that have failed the British people. And I think we should stop asking for extensions, revoke it, because we're only revoking the process to leave. I think the more we go cap in hand, one day that cap is going to be chucked firmly away and we're going to be told, right, no deal. or no Brexit.
Mm.
And I think that's a snub to the 17.4 million that voted to leave. I think honesty now is an important part in politics. And everyone that you all know, I'm a Remainer, so hopefully you're listening to what I'm saying.
Mm. I'm definitely listening to you. I've learned a lot from these conversations. I think you've got a very fair and balanced view about it.
I think the leadership in this country has failed the people.
Mm.
Because Mrs. May, till her departing day, will say that my deal was a compromise. The problem I've got with that, and the very serious problem I've got with that, is that there wasn't a third option on June the 23rd of leave, remain, compromise. It was binary. You asked the British people whether they wanted to stay or they wanted to go.
But they want to do that again, don't they? And that will just be devastating. It will just split the leave vote. I mean, we've wised up
absolutely
to that trick.
And I always say, I would never back a second referendum because the result of the first one has never been enacted.
Sure.
But I would argue till I'm blue in the face that Article 50 is only the process to leave the European Union. If we revoke it, it doesn't mean to say we're staying, but it would give us the time to actually either elect a new Prime Minister, start again, and stop the clock ticking. Because the EU are not going to negotiate with us.
Already last year they offered us a free trade deal. So why can't whoever becomes PM go back to them and say, look, you already offered us this. And the thing you have to remember, Rob, is we only do 12% of our business with Europe.
Yeah.
It's not a big portion of who we are. And the BBC and our news outlets love to put out there that we will be destroyed without that talk. It's not as bad as they're going to say. It really isn't.
No,
of course,
it isn't.
There will be sectors that suffer, but we're in a lot better position than Europe are to us, honestly, because Germany aren't going to stop selling us their cars, and all these countries will come to us with deals, I promise you. And I do think if we do take off no deal off the table, we literally are just... It is like everyone's saying, it's showing them our hand.
But there's no preparation for no deal.
That's what's been wrong. There should have been preparation. But we deal with 78% of the rest of the world with preparation. It's all sorted. Why do we have to... Sorry, 88% of the rest of the world with no preparation. We know how to do those deals.
But the ideal way... Look, 24th of June, I woke up to us leaving the European Union. And after the first few hours where... The financial markets crashed, the Prime Minister resigned, and basically we had about 2 hours of what on earth is going on in this country.
Mm.
I was disappointed, yes, but I had faith then. I thought, okay, we'll...
You trusted the process.
I'm a Remainer, but I trust the...
Democracy.
The leadership
process
of this country, because the most important thing for any Prime Minister, and it's a message to all of them standing, is that no deal won't work, because we simply haven't prepared for it.
But that's where we disagree. I think we're...
But we haven't got the preparation. And I get what you're saying, but if we just go, well, we won't have a deal then, and then the country hits the skids, which is probably likely...
But it's also what we do with 88% of the rest of our deals around the world.
Exactly, but the problem is...
And also, Europe have already offered us a free trade deal a year ago, which we turned down at the time, but there's no...
But
there's
deals need time to be negotiated. The minutiae of everything needs to be put together. If we go out with no deal and then become the pauper on the continent...
See, this is where I definitely think you're wrong. I think you're in the mindset of how people thought we'd be if we wouldn't join the euro. That was exactly what people were saying.
I never backed the euro.
That's exactly... What you're saying is exactly what was being said then. People were saying...
I have always negotiate from a position of relative strength. If we'd got all the preparations done and we could quite comfortably say, well, don't offer us a deal,
I'd agree with you if we only did our deal with those 550 million in Europe, which is 12% of our business. There's 2.2 billion out there, which we currently deal with.
Yes.
And we don't have free trade deals with at the moment,
What our economy doesn't need is a shock. And if we leave without a deal and it causes uncertainty... We've weakened ourselves again because then we start negotiating with a trade deal. Again, Everyone else has got the whip handle. Well, the UK desperately
but
needs
we've already
this.
Had America. And I tell you what I don't like the BBC doing. It maybe isn't the BBC, but one of the channels on TV at the moment are doing this thing about America wants a trade deal with you, and they've got Donald Trump with as a chicken, and they're talking about the chlorinated chicken. And I'm dying to see that programme because I know a lot about that. And it's just trying to say trade deals with America are bad, and do you want your chicken chlorinated and things like this? Whereas we have all our water chlorinated. There's so much in that. It's really biased reporting at the moment on everyone seeing it on TV.
Do you think
on
it's
the
biased
radio.
Against Trump?
I think it's just being like, oh, a trade deal with America would be really bad. Wouldn't it be fantastic for this country? I mean, you know, I half live in America a lot of the time, so it's a special place to me. But I definitely think that the British population are being indoctrinated to think that these deals, we'll die if we're not shackled to Europe.
I disagree vehemently, but I don't think I'm going to get my point across. I just think we should always go for a position of strength. We're weakening ourselves every time. I mean, we've gone asked for extension after extension. The EU are bored of us.
And I tell you, and they would have come.
We're obsessed with this idea that the EU are going to come racing to us.
But they will, Rob. They buy more from us than we buy from them.
Do you know?
I mean, sorry, we buy more from them than they do from us.
But they're not obsessed with Brexit anymore. They've moved on. They've put their deal in front of us.
But already,
take it or leave it.
But they need our money.
Their deputy negotiator, Sabine Wayard, has been moved. She's now a trade envoy. They've already moved on. It's like, that's on the table. We're not negotiating.
But you see what happens when we take our $39 billion and don't pay them that on a no deal. They don't get that from us. And you see what happens when they can't start selling their cars and their food and their wine to us. You see what happens. We buy more from them. Do you understand, like, in the economics of it?
But I'll say to you,
you don't think they'll care that we don't buy all their cars and their wine and their food and their...
Okay, well, I'll spin that round on to you. You don't care. I don't care that we won't buy their cars.
But we buy a lot less from them. I mean, they buy a lot less from us. And we can open up our doors to India and America and all these other amazing markets, which is 2.2 billion people who are wanting to have free trade deals with us. We will be a lot better off.
And when we haven't got trade deals with anybody, we won't hold the negotiating hand. We will not hold any cards because every country will know how desperate we are to have a trade deal.
Oh, you see,
and they will start 1-0 in front.
This is where you and I both. This is the fundamentals of our difference in beliefs. Because I don't agree with that at all.
We would start 1-0 behind. Because the US views Britain very fairly. And I know that the special relationship is, you know, it's a matter of conjecture that how much it's valued by the Americans, certainly. And I did hear Christopher Mayer speak on a podcast once and said, you do realise the special relationship only matters to us in America. They just insert the word special relationship in any speech involving the UK just to tick the boxes.
No, Americans, I mean, I've lived on and off in LA for the last 12 years. We're definitely very special to America. Every American has a special relationship with us.
But they do view Britain as a very great country and a landing stop into the UK. So they'll bring their goods over here, and if they can find a home for it in Britain, brilliant, they'll do it. But then they know they've got the access to the EU. We've been a fantastic gateway.
But Europe are not going to turn that tap off. Europe benefit mainly for us being the...
They would do, because Germany would go, hey, US... Frankfurt.
We're still the number one financial institute in the world, although morning the Fox News in America are reporting that New York has just overtaken London, but it's not true. The figures, I've double-checked them.
Shocking,
last night.
Shocking, something on Fox News isn't
yeah.
true.
But nobody's going to turn that tap off. They're not. It's going to just give us a massive position of strength that we can make our other negotiations and bring India into the table. And
is that if we revoke Article 50 now and actually spend time and actually play the EU at their own game and actually say, OK, you're not going to do anything about that withdrawal agreement, fine. but lay the foundations for no deal and ensure that on day one, after the day we leave, everything ticks over, everything moves, and that the country's prepared. We'd go into every negotiation then much better equipped.
That's what Boris is saying, though, isn't he?
Boris wants World Trade Organization.
Oh, I thought you meant he was saying you prepare
Boris
for no deal.
Boris wants to go on World Trade Organization.
Yeah, but preparing, which, he's preparing
the only leading country that operates on World WTO terms at the moment, Afghanistan.
No, there's about over 100 countries that operate in World Trade Organizations. Okay. There are. This was on another podcast I was listening to the other day. And
anyway, let us segue back from basically Claire and I having an argument.
Do you know what? We probably had the same conversation that so many people across the land have had every Sunday.
This is the frustration. And I think we either revoke it. But one thing that this is... You've got me going now. I've got the soapbox out now.
164 countries out of about 200 are on WTO's rules.
Well, and people that want the detail about WTO can listen to the Economist podcast or something. But okay, fair enough, I'll accept that point. One thing that nobody seems to think is that when we're in the EU, we haven't left, but it's like... The narrative that wants to be woven is that we were somehow bullied by this country. Going back to when
we were. Nobody voted for this. People voted for an economic community. They didn't vote for the social aspect of it all.
And I suspect
our parents. And
I
our
suspect if we could negotiate and say we want to go back to that, I don't think anyone would have a problem. But the notion that we haven't had the failure goes down to leadership. Going back 40 years. Margaret Thatcher not set it up, but she was the Prime Minister that led us into the European Union. She took no quarter from anyone. If she disagreed with somebody, she disagreed with somebody. And she jolly well told people she disagreed with it.
Yeah.
Major. He signed up Maastricht, which has caused a lot of consternation on the Eurosceptic side. But he stood up to people. Blair was told Britain has to join the EU. Not the EU. I don't mean that. The euro. Blair was like, no, it doesn't meet with our economic tests. And it was well. This, and it was like, do what you like.
Mm.
Great Britain is called Great Britain for a reason. We have a damn good voice at that table. And don't let anyone tell you that we were sort of this wimpy school kid that was bullied at that table. We had a damn good voice. What's been the problem is that successive leaders since Tony Blair have basically surrendered everything and gone, oh, well, I'll agree to that then. Instead of actually saying, no, it don't work and I will kick up a scene and I will walk out and I will veto. I mean, when David Cameron used his... I'm squeaking now. When David Cameron used his veto 4 or 5 years ago, the consternation in Europe, oh, the UK is voting, because we had hard won right to veto anything and we knew... All 28 states have to agree to something. One veto, it falls down. So we knew the power of it. And the best prime ministers were like, I'll bide my time. But I will put a spoke in some wheel somewhere. But we're a damn good country.
Mm.
That's the one thing we can agree on.
Of course.
And I hate Brexiteers when they're labelled as they're unpatriotic. No. We all care.
Of course, yeah.
And I think we can have a discussion. We've had... 20, 30 minutes now? We haven't fallen out. We haven't accused each other of anything.
No, and I do respect your view.
And I think we need
just
more
think
of
it's
this
not quite,
in the country.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely...
And that's the failure of leadership, because Cameron, when he walked out, rightly, because he put all his eggs in one basket, and clearly when all the eggs ended up in the other basket, he had to go. But Theresa May's legacy for me is that she took a gap and she made it into the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, you're right.
Because people in this country now... further apart than ever, and it's disgusting.
Mm.
And you see people, Worcester's own results, the Brexit Party came out on top, but if you add the Lib Dem and the Green Party vote together...
Don't you do a BBC on me
but
now.
But it goes past what the Brexit total. But it illustrates, and this is, I'll circle back
but
to...
But also if you add the Conservatives into the Brexit Party, and also maybe the... That goes over.
Exactly. I accept that entirely. I think the premise is that the Conservatives don't know what they're doing, Labour don't know their position. So let's look at the parties that are devoted, like the Brexit Party.
But I know a lot of Green people,
but
definitely.
I'm saying the leadership.
Right.
The leadership want to come out. But I think what the figures show, dramatically is how divided people aren't coming to consensus. Like, Tony Blair wins a landslide in 1997. Does he just govern for all those who voted for him? No, he governed for the whole country. As a result, he gets a similar landslide in 2001. If any Conservative leader took over after Cameron and said, that result was, quote, close, I want to put together a package of measures that gets Britain out of the EU, leaves completely, not this sort of backstops and, you know, we'll be part of this for a while because we'll do this whilst we're doing this. No, it leaves and takes and change. The opportunity was there to talk to 48% of people and say, we know why you voted to stay, but we're going to reassure you that by leaving, do not worry. Your government. I was one of them. I was one of the 48 that wanted the government to go, we know you voted, you're on the other side of it, but don't worry. We are going to get, we're going to remove ourselves from the European Union, but it's going to be done in such a way that you will not notice a thing.
Right. Well.
But it can't be done in 2 years. And I think that's part of the problem with Article 50. You can't untangle yourself in 2 years. It's 40 years of tree roots and things grabbing and growing. But anyway, we know in the West Midlands, 3 of the 7 MPs are from the Brexit Party. There's one Liberal Democrat. There's one... is there one Liberal Democrat? He says. One Lib Dem, one Conservative, one Labour, yes.
Right.
So that was a return as well. I mean, Labour... I mean, Labour lost nearly 9% of their vote in the West Midlands as a whole. And the Conservatives lost 14% of the vote to down to just 10% of the vote in an area like the West Midlands.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Right, if we haven't all bored you to death, let's talk let's talk some local news. Great news as well. It's going to be debated Tuesday night. Worcester City Council, £157,000 they're proposing to put aside to keep St John's and Warndon libraries open. It covers the running costs per year, and this is something that will be allocated every year. It's a good decision. Whether it passes muster, I don't know. But I do know the City Council have set £250,000 aside on working on projects to work with the County Council over. I don't know why I'm doing air quotes again. We're not filming this. I think it's a good idea. There's been protests about this because the County Council simply can't run the services that it used to because it hasn't got any money.
Right.
But so this is the City Council stepping in.
And those libraries don't, they're not just books anymore. Libraries are community centres. Yeah. They have lots of groups and courses and education. They're, I mean, it's so important, isn't it? And they're two fantastic libraries.
They are fantastic. The one is St John.
Yeah.
But interestingly, in the report that's been discussed by councillors on Tuesday, was they want to keep it, no reduced opening hours. This is basically keep them as they are with the look at growing them as businesses. As well. I mean, nobody, I mean, the protesters had a very, certainly the ones in St John's had very, very good points. They knew times were hard. They knew that the County Council hadn't got any money. All they were saying is, well, open a Starbucks in it or open a coffee, an independent coffee chain or something. Add something into it to bring some money in. Just don't go for the nuclear button every time and just think, oh, close.
That's such a good idea.
It is. Good idea. We'll bring you up to speed with it next week, hopefully, what the decision was. One thing that is starting today as we record this on Thursday is the Elgar Festival. Love Elgar. If any of you don't know, I discovered classical music, the benefits of classical music at the start of this year on Classic FM. I wonder if I add them on Twitter, they'll retweet it. And Elgar, certainly very... The number of Elgar tunes that I can now hum away. Very, very exciting. This is taking place across the city, kicking off with a cello concerto at Worcester Cathedral this evening, which is a massive highlight. I've been once and it's terrific.
And it's 100 years since his completion of that, apparently, the famous one. 100 years.
100 years.
Well, was he actually from Worcester? He lived in Worcester town?
Worcester Broadheath.
Okay.
Because where the Birthplace Museum is, because that's where he was born.
Right.
But yes, he's as Worcester / Malvern.
Did he go to like school in Worcester? And
I don't know.
Be interesting to find out because he's everyone always talks about Elgar this, Elgar that, and yeah, fantastic. 100 years, we should be proud
years
of him.
Indeed, I mean, and a big all the best to classical musician Raphael Walfisch, Who is the head? Who will be headlining the concert this evening?
Brilliant! And they're also doing talks and poetry readings and recitals and family events. There's loads going on. You can find out all the details on the website, which is. Do you know what the website is, Rob?
It's www.elgarfestival.org/what-on.
Okay, great.
That was almost professional. Then you handed over to me. Looking forward to that. I'm glad we actually got the space to actually run it in its entirety as well, because there was a lot of information to get in, and I'm sure Worcester's a great city for classical music, let's be honest. It's a great city for all music. A couple of public service announcements before we wrap up. Southern Link Road, there's going to be two bridges being installed. They need to be installed, obviously, to improve the area and help traffic, so that means the road will be closed 7 p.m. on Saturday until 7 p.m. on Sunday, so it's always traffically bound anyway, very chronic anyway, so avoid it from 7 p.m. on Saturday. And there was another public service announcement I wanted to do, yes, and say all the very congratulations to Bar 45 Worcester Limited, who are the new owners of the Cap and Gown.
Oh, fun.
On the tithing, it was up for sale after the previous landlord, Ted, lovely bloke, left to go run a pub in Trawley. But just to say, very good luck, because the Cap and Gown, if regular listeners will know, it's held general election hustings for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
In a pub, which I always think is very, very unique.
And do we know if they're going to keep it the same? Or
there's going to be a big revamp.
Big revamp. Oh, because it kind of had a nice vibe there.
But heading towards being showing sporting events.
Oh, fun.
More.
Great.
Than that. Right, I think we've rambled on long enough. Have you got the time? Oh,
yeah, we've been about 40 minutes.
Oh,
but,
my word. Let's wrap that up then, and let's see what's going on in another packed week across Worcester with Claire's What's On Worcester Roundup.
For all the things to do and see this week, it's Claire Bullivant with this week's What's On Guide.
Thanks, Rob. And on to some more fun things now. No more politics. I'm back with some fun things happening this week in town. My name is Claire Bullivant at the Worcester and Malvern Observers, and these are my top picks of things to do and see this week in the Worcester and Malvern areas. Starting off the weekend on Friday, the 31st of May. You probably know, and we mentioned it earlier on the podcast, but it's the Elgar Festival happening right now. This year is 100 years since the completion of Elgar's Cello Concerto, one of the most beloved and admired works in classical music history. Well, the Elgar Festival, which is happening right now until the 2nd of June, it celebrates this occasion with a gala performance of the Cello Concerto from the English Symphony Orchestra, and it's all part of an immersive and engaging schedule of festival events, including talks and poetry readings, recitals, choral concerts, family events. There's loads going on. There's an exhibit right now at the Guildhall. There's also a lunchtime recital on Friday at the Elgar School of Music. The Elgar Choral Society, they return to the Furs for a coffee concert featuring an hour's programme celebrating English composers on Saturday. There's also the hugely popular Pomp and Poetry Again, concerts in the cathedral, loads going on. Go to elgarfestival.org and you can see the whole itinerary of events and get your tickets there. We hope to see you at some of the Elgar events about town going on over the weekend until the 2nd of June. Moving back now to Friday, the 31st of May. If you love your classical music, the Musical and Amicable Society with Mark Bajant on oboe will be on at the Guildhall on Friday as well. They put on some fantastic concerts. Their website is earlymusicworcester.org, and Worcester is like Worcestershire, WORCS.org. Also on Friday, the wonderful Bob Drury is on at Huntington Hall with his Viva Neil Diamond show. When Bob Drury was in Las Vegas a few years ago, they described him as one of the finest vocal tributes to Neil Diamond ever. And he's back now touring the UK with this new show, celebrating the legendary Neil Diamond, of course, and his incredible back catalogue of songs. He does all the favourites, such as Forever in Blue Jeans, I'm a Believer, Red Red Wine, and of course, Sweet Caroline, my personal favourite. Plus Neil Diamond's UK hit Pretty Amazing Grace and a few lesser known songs that are sure to welcome your favourites by the end of the evening. A fantastic evening is guaranteed, and get your tickets from Worcester Live for that. Friday is also host to loads of live music going on all over town. Shanghai Shuffle have called us and said they've got a music show going on at the Cozy Club in Worcester on Friday night. Time of the Mouth and the Insomniacs, they're on at the Mars Bar in Worcester on Friday evening. The Jericho Racks, they're a great band. Hip Flask, Virgins and the Sunlight Machine, they've got a show at Paradiddles. Call of the Kraken are on at Drummond's on Friday night. Swamp Candy, I keep hearing about this band Swamp Candy. I think they must be a local band because they keep performing all over the place, but haven't actually seen them yet. If you see them at the Chestnut on Friday, let us know, because we do need to go out and see them at some stage. Dead Dad's Club, Glitch and Word of Mouth are on at Annie's Burger Shack in Worcester on Friday evening. And Chevy Chase, Stole My Wife are on at the Sociable Beer Company on Friday night. And if you're over in Malvern on Friday evening, Martin and Eliza Carthy are on at the Malvern Cube. This is the good Dr. Martin Carthy and his twice Mercury-nominated daughter, Eliza Carthy, joining forces to perform songs from their first duo album entitled The Elephant. Eliza was actually nominated for Folk Singer of the Year a couple of years ago by BBC Radio 2, and Martin is a legendary ballad singer and guitarist who's influenced a generation of artists, including Bob Dylan and Paul Simon. It's going to be a wonderful concert, so get your tickets for Friday night from the Malvern Cube if you want to go to that. Moving on to Saturday, the 1st of June, it's the Arctic Spas Ladies' Day at Worcester Racecourse, going on all day there, 11:30 a.m. until 7 p.m. This is thrilling summer jump racing. Plus, you also get to see the Epsom Derby live on screen. And I tell you what you want, what you really, really want. You also want live music from the Spice Girls tribute Wannabe, don't you? Because that's going to be there too. Book now at Worcester Racecourse. It's going to be a fantastic day there. Mark Steele and his Every Little Thing's Gonna Be All Right show is on at Huntington Hall also on Saturday. That's Saturday evening. Mark, the star of Radio 4's Mark Steele's in Town and Newspaper Columnist of the Year, he's touring all over the country right now with this show, and apparently it's guaranteed to make the world seem even more mental than it already is. Is that possible? I don't know if that is possible, but we'll see. Apparently it's a great show. He's a very funny man, very clever, and definitely worth getting some tickets for. You can get them from Worcester Live. Also, some live music we've been asked to mention on Saturday evening. Sleuth and Vinnie Peculiar, they're going to be doing their thing at Paradiddles. Always a good time with Vinnie Peculiar. It's Gringo's House Party with Gringo Blue and his special guests down at the Swan in Worcester on Saturday evening. And the Black Pears will be putting on a show at the Green Dragon in Malvern on Saturday evening. There's also a concert from Downland Works happening at the Guildhall, 7:30 p.m. start, and ticket for that from earlymusicworcester.org. Moving on to Sunday, the 2nd of June, Emily Askew Band is performing at Old St Martin's in the Corn Market at 3 p.m. Tickets for that from earlymusicworcester.org. And on Sunday, the Ballet Theatre UK presents Swan Lake. They're going to be live at the Swan Theatre for a showing at 3 p.m. And if you haven't heard of Ballet Theatre UK, they've got a fantastic following, offering exquisite small-scale ballet shows in local venues at a fraction of the price that you'd pay at big city venues, where audiences are often seats, you know, away from the stage and all the action. This is an ideal introduction for new or younger ballet fans, and once you've seen it, you'll definitely become a fan. It's featuring new photography, over 120 new costumes, and totally stunning sets, and this production really promises you. It'll provide you with a new look at the classic tale and leave you with a new love for Swan Lake. Get your tickets for that from Worcester Live. It's definitely worth going to see. And I love going to the ballet. You can't beat it. Also on Sunday, don't forget the coffee concert with Zoe Bayers on violin and Philip Moore piano at Huntington Hall at 3 p.m. They'll be performing Debussy violin sonata in G minor, David Matthews' Romanza for violin and piano, and Elgar, of course, our favourite Elgar. It's going to be a special concert. And anyway, there's loads more events, so do check out this week's Worcester Observer online and also through your letterboxes. And if you have any events that you'd like included, please do get in touch with us. You can email us your event details or give us a call and we'll help you publicise it to all the readers of our newspapers, listeners of this podcast, and we'll also pop you on our social media channels. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week. Back to you, Rob.
You're listening to the Worcester Observer podcast because you have impeccable taste.
Well, thank you so much for that, Claire, and thank you for a good, healthy debate. I think we won't be here next week. We'll both be on question time or something.
I think so.
But thanks for your input once again, and thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed that, we've been the Worcester Observer podcast. If we haven't, we've been something completely different. But do look out for us, because we're going on all the podcast apps now, aren't we? So we're going to be available everywhere soon.
Everywhere, taking over.
We're going global. Until then, we'll return at our regular time, hopefully, and regular upload time or whatever. Uploading, isn't it?
Uploading podcasts, yes. and then you download it,
that's right. Yeah. I'll learn the terminology by next week as well. Let's wrap up, let's get out of here. Until then, I've been your host, Rob George. Thanks for listening. I think we're done here. Bye-bye.
Bye.